At the Commonwealth Policy Foundation, we try to approach the issues of life, marriage, religious liberty, and fiscal integrity from a biblical perspective that promotes thoughtfulness and kindness. We work with political leaders and concerned citizens from all across the state. To stay informed, visit commonwealthmatters.org and sign up for our e-newsletter. The Commonwealth Policy Foundation is a nonprofit organization that only exists because of friends like you. Thanks for tuning in to The Commonwealth Matters.
Welcome to The Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson here with Dr. Gary Houchins, and we are talking school choice. Gary is a former social studies teacher, assistant principal, principal, and district administrator, and now professor at Western Kentucky University, and he has also served on the Kentucky Board of Education. Gary, that's a mouthful, and I didn't even cover everything you've done in your bio, but welcome to the Commonwealth Matters.
Thanks, Richard. Great to be here.
Hey, school choice, a hot topic during this legislative session. We've seen a couple of school choice bills move forward. By the time this program airs, I'm not sure the session will be done. But it's an issue that really raises a lot of emotions. There seems to be a lot of concerns on both sides of the issues. On both sides of the issue, you have those who are in the teaching profession, those administrators on one side, and then you have parents. Often parents who might be in a lower socioeconomic strata might have their kids in struggling schools, and they're saying, "Hey, we need something better for our kids." I just noticed with one of the school choice bills, it was House Bill 9, which would provide a funding mechanism for charter schools in Kentucky. That recently passed the House. And I happened to look on the Twitter feed, and I really try to stay away from Twitter. That is not a good place to be.
It's a cesspool sometimes.
It is. And it's just, there's a lot of emotion and even misinformation. But I'll tell you, many teachers around there, and they were fired up. Some felt like it was the end of public education. Some felt betrayed by their state representative for voting for that. Charter schools, is that what is going to happen if they're passed and if they come to Kentucky? And of course, Gary, we've had a charter school law in the books since 2017. They just really weren't funded properly, were they?
That's right. They weren't effectively weren't funded at all. The 2017 charter bill had a one-year funding mechanism attached, and that expired. And as a result, we don't have charter schools in Kentucky. But 46 other states have charter schools, and you know, if I could reassure my fellow educators, the experience of those other states does not suggest that they are the end of public education. In fact, what we find is that many charter schools, especially in our larger urban areas, are doing an extraordinarily good job educating poor students, often minority students, kids who have traditionally been in struggling schools that weren't meeting their needs. And so, you know, if we're serious about closing achievement gaps, we're serious about racial equity and making our schools fairer for students, regardless of their backgrounds, we ought to be looking at charter schools as one of many tools that we're using to close the gap.
So 46 other states have charter schools. It has not spelled the end of public education in these other states. I'm reminded of something that Mark Twain said years ago about Kentucky being a little bit slow in catching up to national trends. But he said, at the end of the world, I want to live in Kentucky because everything happens 20 years later in Kentucky. So maybe we will see charter schools at some point or another. Gary, this bill, House Bill 9, allows two pilot charter schools to begin, one in Louisville, one in Northern Kentucky. And then if any other school district wanted to allow a charter school in, it would have to be approved by the local school board.
That's correct. That's right. They're the only authorizer in Kentucky.
What's the likelihood of that happening?
Very slim. I mean, I can conceive of situations where a district might itself initiate a charter school because they would see it as an opportunity to potentially meet the needs of some student group or some community need. Maybe they want to do a program for gifted and talented students, and they feel like a charter format might be the best way to address that need. But otherwise, I can't imagine a school district giving a school permission to come in and compete with it for students. That's just not going to happen. So I think even if House Bill 9 has become law by the time this airs, I don't anticipate that under this particular law we'll have more than those two charters in the state of Kentucky.
Another important education bill is House Bill 305, the expansion of education opportunity accounts. This was something passed last year, and it allows private individuals or private companies to donate to a grant-making organization, and that organization would give scholarships to children in need. Again, those at the lower socioeconomic strata. There's a lot of opposition to that last year.
There was. In fact, it passed the House of Representatives with only 51 votes. It was vetoed by the governor and overridden. There was a lot of controversy over that bill, and as expected, because this happens in every state that adopts school choice, a group of local school districts went together and sued the state to stop this law from being implemented, and they've successfully tied that up in state court now. We're hoping that the state Supreme Court will give a good ruling on that. But in the meantime, House Bill 305 that you mentioned, it seeks to make that program statewide. The bill that passed last year, families in the eight largest counties were eligible to participate. And we know that there are families across the state who would benefit from this kind of opportunity if it were provided for them.
You know, Gary, one of the things I saw during that debate last year was some were charging that this was using public tax dollars to fund private schools, is what they were saying. That's not what the bill did.
No, that's really an outright falsehood. Mm-hmm. The scholarships we're talking about here are funded by private individuals donating their own money. Now, there is a tax credit mechanism that encourages those donations because those scholarship programs already exist around the state. But we know from their experience that there are literally thousands of families who are eligible to participate in those programs, but they're not able to do so because the funding is not there for those scholarship programs. This would help to change that.
In fact, doesn't that lawsuit that did come to the Franklin Circuit Court, I believe it's in Philip Shepherd's court, didn't the lawsuit charge that it's misusing or misappropriating public tax dollars?
That it certainly did. Yeah, that's part of their argument that somehow a tax credit is an appropriation. And there's not a court in the country, to my knowledge, that has ever agreed with that. In fact, the United States Supreme Court has ruled that tax credits aren't appropriations. And let's face it, last year the state legislature also adopted more than $100 million of other kinds of tax credits, including incentives for movie companies to come in here and do their work, for the renovation of historic hotels. And the education establishment is not complaining about those tax credits. They're only complaining about this small tax credit that might create an opportunity for a lower middle income family to exercise a different education option.
Gary, one of the things as Americans is we value choice, don't we? Coke or Pepsi, you know, Ford or Chevrolet, right? You can choose what kind of job you have. You can choose what school, college anyway, or secondary, post-secondary ed. We value choices, yet when it comes to K through 12 education, not a whole lot of choices in Kentucky. Why is that?
No. Well, I think, you know, we're living with a 100-year-old legacy of educational structure and delivery. I think there are some valid historical reasons that we created this system of geographically bounded government-run schools. I think that was a well-intended project to begin with. But what that's caused us to do now is to be unable to imagine any other way of delivering the public good of education outside of these government-run schools. And the truth is that for a lot of other sectors of the economy, we recognize that there can be a public good funded by the people, and nevertheless, the beneficiaries of that good get a choice of provider. And that's possible in education too, but we've got to start thinking about those dollars as being for students and not for systems.
And Gary, when you did a legislative briefing for us, you really fleshed that out beautifully, differentiating the good of the individual, letting that individual choose what's best for them, that family choose what's best for that child, allowing that child to thrive in an educational setting where they're going to flourish and do well, as opposed to funding a system. You mentioned, he talked about, you know, nobody goes onto campus and said, look at all those nice school buses, look at this beautiful big building. Those are structures there to help facilitate the goal of educating. Mm-hmm. But really the goal should be to educate the individual, that child, teaching them to read and to write and to find their God-given calling, right? To find that thing that they're made to do and, yeah, and to encourage them. And it does not always take place in the public school setting, does it?
That's right. The learning can happen in a wide variety of settings. Educators themselves know this and sometimes talk very, very cogently about that. But when it comes to the possibility that we should let students learn outside of government-run schools and that we should provide funding and resources for them to be able to do that, that's a bridge too far for a lot of our folks in education who can only imagine somehow state-run schools as the best way to get that job done.
Oh, that's a good point. What are the chances of further school choice, I should say, passing? I'm thinking the EOAs that hasn't really made much progress in the House or Senate. Do you think that's going to pass this session?
Something is going to have to happen on the Senate side at this point that we're recording this for that to be the case. We've got to build a stronger grassroots network to make it clear to our Republican lawmakers who should be for school choice, you know, by opposing school choice. We have Republican lawmakers who have put themselves on the same side as Andy Beshear. They've put themselves on the opposite side of people like Rand Paul and Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump and many other champions of school choice. And I think it's because they don't see that this is a basic, fundamental, consistently conservative issue, and it's going to take voters to make them aware of the fact that we expect consistency on that issue as well.
So if those advocates of school choice don't really have a voice, they don't have many legislators' attention, which, by the way, in your region, South Central Kentucky, the Bowling Green area and surrounding counties, there's a group of legislators that have voted consistently against any school choice right in your backyard. So you got some work to do over there.
We certainly do. Now, some of those lawmakers did vote for the final version of House Bill 9 that made it out of the House in this session. So that was a little glimmer of hope. But again, House Bill 9, as it passed, was severely watered down and compromised in comparison to the bill that was initially being considered. And so I think in a lot of ways they compromised that bill in order to get those votes. And it was compromised to the extent in which, just as we were saying, realistically, I don't think we get more than two charter schools out of that bill. So there's still much work to be done. And particularly in South Central Kentucky, we've got to make sure that our lawmakers know we expect them to do that work.
So the KEA, Kentucky Educators Association, has a strong presence in Frankfort. They have a big megaphone. They can activate their members to engage in an issue. What's being done with the school choice advocates?
Right. That's the challenge for us, of course, is that, you know, you have this built-in network for organizing teachers and educators to lobby. You know, the public school superintendent can send an email out to every staff member in the entire district and ask them to engage in political lobbying.
Is that legal? I mean, they're public school employees. Can they encourage public employees to engage?
Well, they can't engage. They can't ask them to engage in clearly partisan political activity. But the argument that they would make is that this is just in the best interest of the school. And so I don't know that it's ever been litigated, but it's certainly something that I would love for taxpayers to pay a lot more attention to, how those public resources get used for political advocacy purposes.
The reason I bring that up, Gary, is because it is against the law for a public agency, especially somebody at the head of an agency, to solicit money on behalf of a candidate. They cannot invite other public employees to a fundraiser or solicit donations on behalf of a candidate. That is clearly against the law. Now, this is a different category, but it's similar in that you're talking about public employees advocating on behalf of public laws at the legislature.
And using public resources to do so. But that makes it possible for them in a single email to probably generate potentially hundreds of calls or emails against school choice. Well, there's no similar kind of infrastructure to email families throughout the Commonwealth to say, hey, here's how you would benefit from this school choice policy. Call or send an email. You know, we're just never going to have the same kind of organized lobby on behalf of school choice that the anti-school choice crowd has.
There is a group called EdChoice Kentucky. They're engaged. There's a fairly new 501c4 advocacy group that's been engaging across the state. There's a homeschool group, the Kentucky Homeschool Association. Homeschool Educators of Kentucky, something like that. Anyways, they've engaged in the past. So perhaps that's something for any of the listeners to consider. If you would like to move the needle on the issue of school choice, maybe this is a cause you want to take up and organize some kind of a grassroots effort to let people know that their voice needs to be heard, especially come election time, which we have one just around the corner, and when the legislature is in session. If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson with the Commonwealth Policy Center, here with Dr. Gary Houchins, a professor at Western Kentucky University. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back in just a moment. Hi, Richard Nelson here with the Commonwealth Policy Center. It's clear that the news media isn't always fair. In fact, there's lots of far-left bias and political gamesmanship. No surprise there. So if you're looking for a perspective that's grounded in the truth of Scripture and our nation's founding principles, then get plugged into CPC's resources. Sign up for our e-newsletter at commonwealthpolicycenter.org. You can also follow us on Facebook at Commonwealth Policy Center. And we're on Twitter at CPC4Kentucky. Welcome back to the Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson here with Dr. Gary Houchins, and we are talking school choice. Gary, you have been involved with public education to one degree or another for your whole life. You've taught private school for 3 years, but you've been involved with the public schools from elementary, I believe, high school. Now you're at the university level. You teach educators. You teach administrators. So how does somebody like you, so invested in public education, come out advocating for school choice?
Well, I take a lot of heat for that, of course, because people think that I'm somehow a traitor to the cause of public education. Mm-hmm. But my position on this, I've actually believed in school choice my entire career, but I've not always been in a position where I could publicly advocate for it. And so my position at the university gives me the autonomy and the independence to be able to do that. The reason I believe in it is that I've had the privilege of visiting probably more than 100 schools across Kentucky and in other states throughout my career in different roles that I've had. And my biggest takeaway from that has been that that no school, no matter how good it is, can be a perfect fit for every single child. And we actually set educators up in a terrible kind of way when we expect them to be all things to all students. Kids, as any teacher can tell you, are unique. Every child is diverse in terms of their needs, their learning preferences. Every family is unique in terms of its values and the priorities it has for their children's education. And so I believe in educating kids, and I believe there are that any healthy education environment ought to have a multitude of different educational options available for families, whether that be classical Christian education, whether that be Montessori, whether that be a college preparatory program of some kind. I just think there are a lot of different ways of approaching educating children, and every family, regardless of income, ought to be able to access those different options in any community that's big enough to have a demand for those different options. Because ultimately, Richard, I didn't become a teacher to defend an education system. I became a teacher to serve students. There are a lot of different ways to serve students.
Yeah, yeah. You, when you did a legislative briefing for us, you distinguished between supporting or defending an institution versus really educating the person, the child. And to your point, we're all unique. We're individuals. We have different styles of learning. We learn at different paces. And sometimes we're going to do better in different settings. And the idea of choice is something that's so American, right? We're all for choice, except when it comes to education in Kentucky. Because as we talked in the previous segment, Kentucky's just one of a handful, one of four states that does not have charter schools. And school choice has been defeated time and again. But we're seeing glimmers of hope that is changing. Gary, what would you say to the parent in their community? They want to see school choice. They realize that it's going to benefit their child. It's going to help their child do better in life, but they don't know what to do and where to begin. What would you tell them?
So I think that we have to have a lot of parental and community engagement to try to understand more about these issues. School choice policies they're complicated. They're technically complicated. And sometimes our opponents use that complication against us to throw up barriers or excuses or reasons why we shouldn't support school choice. So folks have got to be well educated on these issues, and they've got to be politically engaged. They've got to let their lawmakers know that they support this issue. And there are a lot of great organizations out there working in Kentucky now that are both educating and advocating. Commonwealth Policy Center has now made school choice a priority, and we're grateful for that. EdChoice Kentucky is a nonprofit, nonpartisan group that's primarily geared to helping people understand these issues. Commonwealth Educational Opportunities, CEO, is a new organization that's designed to work more on the political side. A lot of our other partner institutions, the Bluegrass Institute, Pegasus Institute, getting plugged into the work that those organizations are doing will help people better understand these issues, but also help them better understand how to advocate for them. And at the end of the day, it's going to take a lot of conversations with local lawmakers to say, look, you need to make this happen. We know from the experience of other states that school choice is not going to do damage to our local public schools. So let's create an opportunity for those families who really need another choice.
Gary, I mentioned previously that about 70% of Kentuckians want some kind of school choice. Do you think this is coming about because of some of the more controversial issues that are going on in the public schools? I think of the transgender athletes. The Kentucky legislature just passed a bill that would keep biological boys on the male sports teams, keep biological girls on the girls' sports teams, although that's mostly a one-way street, right? It's the boys that want to play on the girls' sports teams. But that's been a hot issue, transgender athletes. Another hot issue is critical race theory. This is very controversial. It is being taught in public schools here and there. There's a bill that would essentially prohibit the teaching of labeling an entire race of students and then guilting them. It doesn't matter what the color is or what the ethnicity is, but that's a bill, Senate Bill 138, that is moving forward in the Kentucky legislature. So I bring these two issues up, transgender athletes, critical race theory. Are these issues moving parents to look for choices?
I think they are. I think we should note that school choice has always polled well, even pre-COVID and before some of these issues became such hot-button topics. Generally speaking, voters, whether they're Democrats or Republicans or independents, like the idea that we should fund students, not systems. But I think you're right. I think in the last 2 years, parents have become more aware than ever of what's going on in their kids' schools. And I think the COVID shutdowns, mask mandates, concerns about vaccine mandates and how that might affect school-aged children, the critical race theory issue and transgender ideology, these are all things that parents are quite legitimately concerned about. And, I think we know from the experience of other states that the vast majority of families, even in a school choice environment, are going to choose their local public school. They'll believe that that's the best fit for them, and for most families, perhaps it is. But we definitely want to make sure that parents have the option of choosing not to send their kids to an environment that fundamentally violates their own family's values. And the only way to do that for all families is to ensure that we have school choice policies in place.
Very good. Gary, when you came into the legislative briefing for us, for Kentucky legislators, you answered some objections, common objections to school choice. Now, I'm going to pitch some to you.
Sure.
We've got about 5 minutes left in the program. One of the common objections is that schools, charter schools, private schools, where there's EOAs, where parents can use those funds to send their kid to the private school, that those schools would cherry pick the best and the brightest and leave challenged special needs students behind in the public schools.
No, because I think the thing to point out about the EOA provisions is that these are all the scholarships that are connected to them are all based on income eligibility. And the law itself stipulates that the neediest students get the first access to those scholarships. So you're not talking about affluent families, and you're not talking about typically kids who are already doing well in school. You're talking about kids who are struggling in their current school environment who are looking for an alternative, right? Those are typically not the easiest students to educate. And so in that case, these private or non-public schools are taking them on.
So one of the objections is that public schools will be hurt. In fact, a state legislator who is also a high school principal, good guy, known personally, he believes that charter schools are a vote against public education. He believes it's going to hurt his school if a charter school came into his community. Is there evidence of public schools being hurt when charter schools come in?
If you look at states like Florida, which have the one of the most robust school choice environments in the country and some of the oldest programs in place, we know that the public school students in Florida outperform Kentucky's public school students across every demographic variable. So the evidence from other states is that not only does school choice not hurt or destroy public schools, but something about introducing that competitive element seems to cause student performance, even in traditional public schools, to increase.
That's good. Gary, we appreciate your time joining us on the Commonwealth Matters. Appreciate your advocacy for choice and for those families that would thrive if they had school choice options available to them. Do you have any final words?
No, we're just grateful for everybody's attention and concern about this issue. And I just encourage everybody to keep fighting for the best schools we could possibly get.
Gary Houchins, thank you so much for joining us.